Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Well, hello everyone and happy new year. It's been a long time since I've been on the air. Lots of sports preemptions. I hope you've all been well, and I hope you are doing okay without the legal advice I give every week. But hopefully we're going to be on track, and my show is now from 3 to 5 p.m. So tell all your friends to tune in. We cover the legal stories of the week and some interesting guests weighing in on legal topics. I'm a practicing lawyer, have been doing it for about 33 years. And what we also do is take your legal questions. And today, because we have a rather short show, we're going to be taking your calls about 4:30, quarter till 5, and we'll see how many we can get in at that time. The number here is 312-981-7200. And we have some interesting guests. In the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking about women in leadership. And Victoria Pelletier is an expert on corporate America and leadership. And we're going to talk a little bit about, is it true that women do better in leadership roles when there is a crisis? And there are some studies that show that that is, in fact, the case. We also have a vice president, female vice president, for the first time. And we're going to weigh in on that. And also about women in the workforce. And women who are now working at home and taking care of kids who may be online learning. It looks like Chicago Public School teachers may be on strike come Monday. So we're going to have a lot of women who are forced to deal with those issues and how that can be helped in the workplace and if that's going to set women behind. We're going to also talk about legal New Year's resolutions. I do this every year. People should get together their business, their estate plans, their passwords. And I have a whole list of those things that I suggest that everybody does in the new year. And I'm going to be able to talk about those a little bit and send those out to you if you want to email me here at the station. And the email address is WGN@AskKarenConti.com. But first, I thought that we would run down the top legal news stories of 2020. And to do that with me, I picked two of my favorite reporters. Larry Yellen is a retired investigative journalist and legal reporter for Fox 32 in Chicago. He's won numerous Emmy Awards. He was inducted in the Silver Circle of National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. And I also have Dean Placco, who is starting his 29th year at Fox 32 as a reporter. And he also has won numerous Emmys. And I've worked with both of them for years and call them friends. Hi, Larry and Dane. How are you?
Hi, Karen. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Dane, are you there?
I am. Happy New Year. Thanks for inviting me on.
We're all here together. You guys worked together for a long time, and I've been working for doing commentary for Fox for a long time, and we've covered a lot of stories over the years, and so I thought you, too, would be really uniquely in a position to talk about some of the news stories. So let's start by, and I did the work of kind of culling out the ones that I think are top, and then I'm going to let you tell me if you think that there are some that might be a little bit more prominent. But let's talk why I did not pick the impeachment hearings, and I did not pick the voter fraud election lawsuits. And the reason that I didn't pick those to discuss in detail is because I view those issues as being more political in nature than legal. I'm going to start with you, Larry. You were a lawyer. You went to law school, went to Northwestern. You practiced law for a while. You're legally savvy.
I didn't practice law for a while. I went right into journalism. Let's get the facts straight.
Well, but I think you clerked for a while. Yeah, I think you did some. But, maybe you did one brief or two. But do you agree with me that those were kind of political events rather than legal events?
I think political events and also public relations events. I think a lot of the maneuvering that's going on around the elections right now has to do with the 2024 presidential election. Either members of the House or Senate trying to advance their position and hold on to the Trump base as they move forward to 2024. And so I think it's a lot of a lot more public relations and politics than actual legal questions involved in those cases.
And, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors is the standard for impeachment. And that really, to me, means nothing or everything. And the fact that the articles of impeachment were brought, to me, was a political issue. And the trial and acquittal was also a political issue along political lines.
Absolutely.
Dane, you know, you are still at Fox, and as a reporter, and I know you are very fair-minded, you may have your own, and I'm sure you do, strong political opinions about things, but how do you keep your political views out of your reporting and try to get as fair as fair reporting as you can? And I think Fox Local does a really good job of that, by the way. And I do say so myself.
It's journalism 101. It's what we learned, what I learned back at the University of Illinois, your alma mater as well, I know, Karen.
Yes.
Back in J school. Of course, every reporter comes to the table with their own ideas about things and their own precepts, but your job as a reporter is to tell both sides of the story and try to ascertain the truth and talk to both sides. And I think there is still, in this polarized political world that we live in, there's still room for that.
But yet you turn on national news, and I'll say it, CNN, the liberal side, Fox, the conservative side. And sometimes I flip back and forth. I don't know about you guys, but I'm just thinking, am I even listening and watching the same news story? Because it doesn't seem like it.
I think you're watching, I think you could say kind of two different universes there, Karen. I think that a lot of the cable television networks have assumed the role of opinion makers, trying to form opinions and presenting opinions rather than presenting hard news. Fox News, the cable channel, for example, is known for doing pretty straight news throughout the afternoon and the day, but then at the night their opinion makers go on, and I think that's also true with MSNBC and to a lesser extent at CNN.
And I do want to get to our stories, but I think this is going to kind of be a thread throughout all of the coverage of these stories. And it seems to me that people, I mean, to me, I want to watch the news and I want the facts. The facts as best as I can get them. And if there's two sides to a story, I want to hear both of them. And I want to make up my own mind. And I don't want to be the legal analyst telling you how to think about something unless it's the facts of the issue, not the opinion on the issue. But what is it about people who don't want to hear the other side of the story, who may not like to watch a newscast where it's vanilla? They want to see and hear their opinion being touted. What do you think, Dane? Do you think that that's true, or do you think people still want to get the truth?
No, absolutely. I think it's one of the things that's a little bit scary going forward is, I mean, 25, 30, 40 years ago, we all remember the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite and, you know, the Chicago Tribune and the Sun-Times. And there was a common set of facts that everybody, now you might interpret those facts differently, but everybody sort of believed in the same set of facts. What's a little disconcerting and worrying, frankly, is for the future, is that you can watch, as you say, those separate channels and see completely different facts. They don't even agree on the facts anymore, and that's what I think is problematic.
You know, Walter Jacobson is listening. He's a friend of mine, as he is a friend of both of yours. And I remember Walter, he would do the newscast, and then he would go into a separate area. He'd take off his coat. He had his little suspenders on. And that's when he would do his perspective, which was his editorial opinion. And I know that the news station was very concerned about him giving his opinion. And that would take away, in some way, his objectivity in reporting on the news. And they were so careful about that. And now, to me, it seems that the anchors are completely disregard that line in a lot of the cable news stations.
And
I think in a lot of the cable, go ahead, Dane.
Oh, I was going to say, as Larry pointed out before, especially with the cable stations, I agree with Larry. You tend to see straight down the middle news coverage during the day. It's when the evening primetime programming comes on, and that's where the real money is made. That's when you see the opinion host, and you see the pull to the left and the pull to the right, and the different facts appear. But those are the money-making shows. I mean, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, they're all making a good chunk of their revenues off of opinion programming. And like any other business, I mean, they're going to sell what sells.
Hmm.
And what sells, Karen, is entertainment. And I think Dane would agree, it's a lot more entertaining to watch two people shouting at each other than it is to watch them having a calm discussion about the issues.
Yeah, and that's just, I just heard a broadcast with Ted Koppel this morning, and they were talking about truth and trust. Those are the two things in journalism, that we want to hear the truth and we want to be able to trust what the truth is. And I'm just having some skepticism about getting that from our news, and that's unfortunate. But let's go to COVID. Is there any question that COVID, even the legal aspects of COVID, is the top legal news story of the year? Larry, what do you think?
I think maybe not the top legal news story. I think it's certainly the top story in America and around the world this year, and possibly the biggest in a generation. 9/11 would match up with that possibly, but. In terms of legal stories, you can't disregard the shootings of black men, the abuses that poor and impoverished people have faced in their communities at the hands of police. I think that runs a close second in terms of legal issues to the COVID matter. In terms of COVID, I think that the lasting issue will be a matter of the powers of the state over the individual. I think years from now, we may still be debating just how far the federal government can go in mandating people to wear masks, or is that entirely up to the states? And also, I think we'll be debating just what are the First Amendment rights of churches, synagogues, people with religious beliefs to disregard or ignore mandates from the government regarding public health issues.
I'm going to whip through the legal issues that I've been asked to comment on about the COVID. And yes, absolutely right. The state power, the governor to issue stay-at-home orders, business shutdowns, curfews. Then we have the moratorium on foreclosures and eviction, the CARES Act, which came into effect to protect employees. Again, Larry, as you said, the churches and school shutdowns, waivers that businesses require, immunity from civil suits regarding COVID, and now the issue of vaccinations and whether they can be mandated. Quickly, before we go to break, Dane, when you're covering these stories, did you feel the strain out there on the street with people who wanted to obviously comply with the law and do the right thing and wear their masks, but yet there were people out there thinking that this was some sort of hoax or that it wasn't important to do that? Did you feel that strain of individual liberties versus our collective good?
Yeah, absolutely, especially when doing stories on the economics of COVID and the impact it's had on stores, restaurants, businesses, people working from home. I think the majority of the people I talk to believe it's absolutely dangerous, believe that there need to be restrictions in place. But a lot of the restaurants, especially have been impacted by this, have felt that they were unfairly picked on. They continually point to the fact that big box stores are still open,
right?
Although perhaps with diminished capacity. If they can be open, why can't we be open with diminished capacity? Another thing, what I think from a legal standpoint, Karen, what's been fascinating about COVID to me is just the variability of enforcement, not just from state to state, but literally from county to county and town to town. I mean, here in the Chicago area, in the city of Chicago has been enforcing this very strongly, yet there are a number of suburbs where people are openly eating in, it doesn't sound right, but they're eating indoors openly, defying the governor's mandates, and the local enforcement officials aren't doing anything about it.
Right. And you cross the border into Wisconsin and you see a whole other set of circumstances. And you're right. I see that people see that inequity, and that's something that they have been vocal about. But let's hold on. Let's take a break. I'm here with Larry Yellen and Dane Placco. We're talking about the top legal news stories of 2020. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Good riddance, 2020, but we're still running down the top legal news stories, and we're here with two of the best people to do that, Larry Yellen, an attorney and retired Fox legal analyst and investigative reporter, and Dane Placco, starting his 29th year at Fox. Let's talk about a topic that Larry brought up, and that is police misconduct brutality. On May 25th, Minneapolis police officers arrested George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man. Within minutes, he was dead. in 8 minutes and 15 seconds. There was a knee on his, the police officer had a knee on his throat, and he ended up dying. And what ensued were charges of murder brought against Derek Chauvin, the police officer, and three other police officers who were on the scene. And then, of course, the protests that happened all over the world. It was something that we have never seen before. Protests in 2,000 cities, 60 countries. And as a result of that, there were some looting and damages and riots that, occurred, causing over $2 billion worth of damage. So after all of this is done, things have settled down. We still have had other cases like the Breonna Taylor case, the Ahmaud Arbery case, and the Jacob Blake case close to home here in Kenosha. We see all these issues of police brutality. They're coming to a head. Dane, you covered these stories. And how did you approach covering the issue of the protest, the legitimate hearing of grievances by the people out in the streets versus the looters and the damage that was done to the cities?
Yeah, it can be a difficult balance because clearly, I'll tell you just one of the nights I was out with the protests. It was shortly after the Floyd murder, early on, as the protests were building. There had already been the big night of looting in Chicago. I think this was the Monday or Tuesday following that initial weekend looting. And I covered a rally up on the north side. It started at basically Belmont and Clark and walked into Uptown. It was put together on the fly. It spread through social media. There must have been 5,000 people within a matter of hour that were marching into Uptown. And it was a very peaceful rally. It was people from all stripes, all colors, all ages. It was really, really cool to see them come together around this cause. Now, as the rally ended around 9 o'clock and we were doing our live shots reporting that there had been, it was very peaceful. There were no broken windows. Everybody was behaving. Police were keeping an eye, but there were no problems. As soon as the sun went down and the majority of the crowd went away, there were some people embedded in that crowd that were looking to cause trouble. And sure enough, we heard the sound of breaking windows, and it was a pawn shop around the corner that was being raided. And then within the next hour, there were about five or six businesses nearby that had been broken into. And so you have to try to get the sense across that, yes, these are societal changes. These are important social struggle issues. It's coming to a head. This has been a problem in this country forever. It seems like in many people's eyes, the sincerity of the anger is debased by the looting. And you have to try to, you know, report that as fairly as you can.
You know, let's take a break. And can you join us for another 15 minutes, both of you?
Sure. I'm good.
Okay, good. We'll take a break now. And the news is from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're running down the top legal news stories for 2020, and we have on the Hochberg phone line Larry Yellen and Dane Placco. I want to finish up with the police misconduct brutality George Floyd issue. I want to ask Larry Yellen, you have covered many legal stories over the course of time that you were at Fox, and you were in the courtroom for a lot of these. Can you just name some of the cases that you covered during your tenure? And I want to ask you the question of, can George Floyd's, the accused in the George Floyd case, the Derek Chauvin and the three other officers, can they get a fair trial in the Minneapolis court?
Well, I'll rattle off a couple names. I covered the O.J. Simpson trial all the way up through Jason Van Dyke last year or a couple years ago. Covered all the Gaylord judges at the Dirksen building, George Ryan and Rod Blagojevich, Dan Walker, all former governors going at the Dirksen building. Going to prison, the murder of Jennifer Hudson's relatives, lots of cases. As to your specific question, based on what I've seen, and especially going to the Jason Van Dyke trial, because that's the closest, the Laquan McDonald case, I think, to the case in Minneapolis, I think a fair trial is possible. The judge at 26th in California, Judge Gawn, ran a very tight ship. And there was a lot of questioning ahead of time as to the jurors and just what they knew about the case, whether they could be fair. And a lot of these cases, they don't go to trial for 2 or 3 years until after the incident. They're not at the top of people's conversations, and the jurors come into them with an open mind. So I think a fair trial is possible.
And Dane, just a quick answer to this. You're on the streets, you're doing the reporting. Do you see long-term bad police-public relationships? I see it myself, but you're on the street more than I am. And do you see that tension, and do you feel like it's going to get better at any point?
Oh, you absolutely see the tension. You see, we'll go to cover a shooting, and we'll see people in the neighborhood angry at the way the police are handling the crime scene. And we'll see police officers getting angry with members of the public or potential witnesses that aren't coming forward. There is definitely, and I'm not breaking any news here, there's a severe lack of trust between the community and the police department in Chicago. And that really is issue number one in resolving all of this.
And I look forward to true police reforms, because we've had a lot of noise over the years about these kinds of issues, and you would think with all of these protests and all of the attention that the issue has gotten that now we're going to do something about it. And I certainly hope that we will, because for all the good police officers out there, and many of them listen to this show and many of them are friends of mine, it's hard to do your job when you have this kind of tension. Let's go to the third national topic that I chose, and it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death and Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation. And I just picked this story because it's going to have long-lasting effects on the way the court is making decisions, and we're going to have some interesting decisions coming down in the next 30 years. Let's start with you, Larry, looking at it from the retired standpoint. How important was RBG to the women's movement? She seemed like she had some popularity outside of the area of legal jurists, people dressing up in Halloween costumes.
There was a whole generation of people who saw her working out and just fell in love with her lifestyle, her habits, her quotations. She influenced young girls to get into the practice of law. She influenced a lot of men to practice law and follow their hearts and dreams to fight for justice in the courts. I think she was tremendously influential, and she will be definitely missed. And I think the way that the replacement was selected was improper.
And we all saw the politics. Again, that was politics, where Merrick Garland was not confirmed during the Obama administration, and yet Amy Coney Barrett was pushed through in a very mm-hmm. quick period of time. And do you think and Dane, you know, you don't have a crystal ball, but are we going to see mm-hmm. court packing issues? Are we going to see the issue of term limits for U.S. Supreme Court justices bantered about in Congress?
You know, what's interesting President-elect Biden's been asked a number of times, and especially during debates, about that issue when it was white hot, and he never tipped his hand, did he?
No.
Would only say that, you know, it's something we'll look at, it's something we'll study, but he never said it was something that he was behind or something he didn't want to do. So, I mean, he's going to have a lot on his plate right off the bat. But I would imagine, if I had to guess, and it's only a guess, I don't see Biden, a traditionalist as he seems to be, looking to pack the court. But there may be some other remedies for some of these issues that have popped up.
Go ahead,
Karen. I know you were asking us for our predictions for the upcoming year or two. And right on that point, the one thing that Biden might be able to do is appoint a Supreme Court Justice. Justice Breyer is 82 years old. He has already said in recent interviews that he will retire rather than die on the bench. And I would not be surprised if the Democrats win those two seats in Georgia on Tuesday, or however long the voting, the counting takes, that with the Senate in Democratic hands, that Breyer, within the next year or two, would decide to step down so that Biden can make an appointment. There can be hearings in front of a Democratic Senate, and Biden will appoint a replacement for Breyer.
Interesting. We'll
That's
be watching.
My prediction
it.
For this year.
And let's just wrap up with the local stories. I'm going to tie two stories together because they both deal with corruption, and that's the Blagojevich commutation and the ComEd scandal. And you may say, well, Blagojevich commutation, really, is that really one of the big news stories? And the reason I included that is that story has dominated the news in one way, shape, or form for 11 years, from the impeachment to the indictment to the first trial to the second trial to appeals, and now finally ending after 8 years in prison with a commutation from a president on the other side of the aisle. I'm going to start with you, Larry. Do you agree that this is a big news story, or is this just sort of ending in a kind of a puff?
I think they're both big news stories. I felt very early on that the best thing that could happen to Rod Blagojevich was for Donald Trump to be elected president, because there he had somebody who knew him, kind of a renegade, willing to take a chance, and Trump did, in fact, commute the rest of his sentence. I think these two stories are connected because they both deal with the very gray area of politics, that when somebody showers a candidate with campaign contributions or gifts, and then the candidate or the elected official appears to do something in return, does that cross the line, or is it legal? And I think that's going to be at the heart of the ComEd case as it goes forward, and Speaker Mike Madigan, the accusations will be that he was showered with gifts by ComEd officials. You know, they hired his friends, things like that, gave them jobs. And did Madigan do anything in return? That will be a huge issue going forward. So far, Madigan is in the clear.
Yeah, and just because, you know, he may not have asked for any of these things. It may be that he's been in power so long that people know if they make Mike Madigan happy, they get preferential treatment. And is that illegal? And where does the line get drawn, which was the same issue in the Blagojevich case, in my view.
Yep.
But we are totally out of time. Thank you both for joining me. I'm sure you'll join me next year at this time. We're going to be looking at, will Trump pardon himself? The FTC lawsuit against Facebook for antitrust violation. Ghislaine Maxwell. Will Supreme Court rule on the constitutionality of Obamacare, up or down? R. Kelly will go to trial in Chicago on at least one of the four cases that are pending, and many other legal news stories. But thank you, both of you, for your time, and happy retirement to you, Larry. And Dane, I'll see you on Fox.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year, Dane. You too.
Happy New Year.
Talk to you later, Larry.
All right.
All righty. Bye-bye.